Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 156. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director with TechTarget, and I am here with Security News Writer Alex Kulafi. Alex, welcome.
Thank you, Rob. Always a pleasure to be here in my own apartment recording a podcast with you.
On a beautiful sunny day, a sunny, warm spring day, right?
Absolutely.
No place we'd rather be.
No place.
Yes, we are in week 9, 10, whatever it is, of our stay-at-home experience amid the COVID-19 pandemic. And we actually are going to talk about something that touches on the pandemic, but in a slightly different way. We are going to talk about election security by way of new voting solutions, specifically mobile voting apps. And Alex, you did a very big story about this week that looked at the issue, or the issues, I should say, around some of this technology. Before we get into those issues, I just want to sort of set the stage here for this. So obviously, there's been a number of elections that have been postponed, or I guess a few were held, a few primary. I think it was Wisconsin actually held their primary presidential primary election to much sort of criticism. But a number of elections have been postponed or pushed back because of concerns about spreading infections amongst people going to vote. And this has sort of opened up the need for, as you explained in your article, these alternative voting approaches, whether it's mail-in ballots or giving everybody absentee ballots or what have you. Well, there's a number of startups out there that have developed, prior to COVID-19, mobile voting solutions or internet portals that you can use from your home computer, or most of them seem to be mobile voting apps that you can use on your smartphone. And there's a number of startups out there. There's some more well-known than others, but there's been a number of pilots. I guess I was surprised at how many there were that have been rolled out over the last 2 years, maybe even 3 years, where people have actually used these apps to vote in elections. Now, it seems like this would be the ideal opportunity for this stuff to really take off, right? We don't want people going to the polls and getting infected. Even if they're wearing masks, you're touching stuff, you're in line. It's not great. Mm-hmm. So so why isn't this, Alex? Why is this not the slam dunk solution to our current problem that that it would appear? Like, it looks like this is just the right time for mobile or internet voting to really take off. What did you find in your research on this article?
So I talked to, I believe, 6 different people, some CTOs. I talked to someone from one of the mobile voting startups. I talked to someone from a mobile voting nonprofit, just to get the different perspectives on this, you know, and just see what the people who are on the more critical side are saying and the people who are on the more evangelical side, one might say, are saying. And the one thing that everyone agreed on is that it's not going to be ready for this year, at least in a general election sense. It's not going to be ready to elect the next president. And the timelines differed. Now, the people who were more optimistic said probably it's about a 4-year project, maybe a 6-year project. And then the less optimistic people said a decade or more.
Wow.
Because it's just not ready yet. There are still security concerns, which I think I should just go into right now.
Yeah. Explain what they are. I mean, I can guess at some of them, and we've written about some of them, but yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So the core, I would say one of the core people I talked to for this article is Jim Hendler, who is an artificial intelligence researcher at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, as well as a fellow at the Association for Computing Machinery, ACM. And he gave he pointed out three major issues with voting via mobile services as the process exists today. One is obvious, which is the threat of hacking. People want to hack elections.
Yep.
The second is that newly deployed code always has problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the third, which was the most interesting one to me because it's the one I hadn't put thought into, is that, yes, we use the internet to make all kinds of business transactions, whether it be commerce, whether it be banking. But the issue is that into commerce and banking, those are technologies that have had a lot of time to be built.
Yep.
Relative to the internet, and have had a lot of money put into them to make sure they run well, and they figured out what acceptable losses are, and all that stuff. But the problem is that mobile voting is still very young, and it hasn't had the same amount of money put into it. There's been no federalized voting system, or no federal push for mobile voting.
Yeah, not only that, it's a great point. We don't really, just reading about some of these pilot programs, the way that they were done is pretty interesting, but they can't, we don't have widely deployed infrastructure and budgets to sort of, on the back end for these local governments to sort of handle these apps. To handle a completely new way of voting. Mm-hmm. And that's to his point, to Hendler's point, it's if you don't have that investment and you don't have that money, you could have one side of the equation, even if the app is secure, but if you don't have a way to sort of receive it on the government's end, receive it, audit it, manage it, and confirm it and do all the things that you need to do that you would do with a paper ballot with an electronic voting system, then it's not you can't really expect it to be widely deployed, let alone be secure. And I thought that was a great point by him. I agree. That last point was something. I mean, everybody knows about vulnerabilities and. Mm-hmm. These apps, a lot of mobile apps are being rolled out and they're going to have flaws. They're going to have vulnerabilities. That's just the way it is. And there's obviously going to be a certain number of threat actors out there, whether they're nation state or whether they're just people looking to hack away at something and cause mayhem and mischief and launch a ransomware attack. They're going to try to get in there. But the fact that there's just sort of this missing investment and this component, this support, whether it's the infrastructure or just the funding that's needed to roll these types of things out, is not there. I mean, we don't even have proper funding for current election systems right now. It's woefully underfunded. And, I mean, a lot of people saw that in 2016 and not much has changed since then. But I just thought that was a really excellent point by him.
I just think that overall, the grand sum of these three points is that mobile voting just needs more time in the oven. If we were just to put it simply, mobile voting needs more time in the oven. There's always the threat of hacking, but if it had more time in the oven, that would be less of an issue. Newly deployed code always has problems. Well, make it so it's not newly deployed code anymore and there will be less problems, hopefully.
Right.
And then more money will be put into it over time once the necessity is realized by more people in power.
Yeah. And we should switch gears here for a minute on that note.
Sure.
Of putting more money into this, because you, as you noted, you spoke to one of the mobile voting vendors out there that's pretty well known. You also spoke with the Mobile Voting Project, which is it's a nonprofit that is pushing mobile voting solutions, promoting them. They're making investments in a lot of these pilot programs, so they're not. So the bill for these things is not going totally on the city, state, or local government that is rolling these things out. They're funding these pilot programs to get this movement off the ground. Mobile Voting Project is part of, it was created by Tusk Philanthropies, which is part of Tusk Ventures, big venture capital firm. The Mobile Voting Project, very interestingly, like on its website, it says, like, as soon as you load that website now, it says mobile voting and COVID-19 in-person elections are going to get harder to run as the COVID-19 pandemic spreads. If you are an election official, state, county, or municipal and want advice on mobile voting, please contact us. And there's a little thing in the bottom. Send us a message where you can contact them. So they've been, Tusk and the Mobile Voting Project have been at the forefront of this movement. They have really been promoting it. They've got their fingers on, they've invested in a lot of, Tusk has invested in a lot of companies, invested in a lot of these pilot programs that don't even have to do with, that aren't even being run by companies that they have an active investment in. But that said, I mean, you talk to these guys, and what was their response to this?
So Mobile Voting Project said it was about a four-year project, right? Mm. And then Votes, they had this quote, Hillary Braseth, who said, "I don't think it's a realistic probability, at least, this calendar year. Mm. It would be irresponsible for us to scale this nationwide before November. We are of the belief that we have to roll out this technology in step-by-step, responsible ways," which was nice to hear. I mean, Votes has gotten into a lot of trouble, but it's nice to hear that that they're at least trying to do it as responsibly as they can.
Yeah, and same with the mobile voting project, that they're realistic about what needs to be done here, and they're not trying to speed up the timeline here to just, you know, for the sake of making money. That they recognize that there are significant challenges here and stuff needs to be done. You mentioned Votes, Votes with a Z, we should say, capital V, Votes with a Z on the end. So they got into, like you said, a little bit of hot water earlier this year. Back in February, some researchers from MIT published a technical paper, revealing several vulnerabilities in their voting app, and sort of questioning whether or not their whole sort of blockchain method for ensuring each vote that was cast through the app was actually using blockchain, or at least using blockchain on the actual app. And they sort of demonstrated ways to which a threat actor could take advantage of these vulnerabilities and tamper or block a vote that was being sent from the app to the backend server. And then they did this in a way that Votes criticized, because they reverse engineered the app and the backend server based on data, because they said that based on data that they had obtained from stuff that was being used in the field, because they said it was different than what the app that HackerOne, the bug bounty program, was what was using on their site for this exact thing, for security research. Hey, come and find bugs in our app. And the MIT guys said, no, this app that is on this bug bounty platform is different. It's not the one that's being used in the field, so we're going to reverse engineer it. Votes came under some criticism for the findings. They pushed back on it really hard. MIT responded and stood by its research. HackerOne eventually decided that they were not going to continue with the relationship with Votes and parted ways with them. And Votes, they had a pilot program, a big pilot program in West Virginia, and that was discontinued sometime after this research came out. So part of the drama there was sort of the friction between Votes and the security research community. The security researchers at MIT. There was also the incident in Michigan where some University of Michigan computer science students a couple of years earlier had found stuff that was wrong with the app. And there was, I guess they got a knock on their door from the FBI because there was concerns about them, you know, trying to hack a voting system. So it got messy here.
I was just going to point out that one of the things that I observed and something that Sheila Nix from Tusk Philanthropies sort of pointed out that I would agree with in softer language, is that the security community, when it comes to mobile voting, is very much critical of the idea of mobile voting, at least as it exists today. Which I'm not saying that's correct or not correct. I'm just saying that the security people I talked to were overall quite critical of mobile voting. And one thing that Sheila said was that she expressed frustration with the security community, which I wouldn't go that far in my opinion, but that she expressed some frustration, saying that some are against mobile voting without having an active desire of here's how it can be made better. She said, "I don't get the sense that some of the security advocates are really interested in solving the long-term problem of voter turnout, and they're solely focused on the narrow security piece," she said. "I think we really need to do both if we're going to have a less polarized democracy than we do now." I think she said it in stronger words than I would, but I do agree that if I had to say whether the security community is for mobile voting or against mobile voting, they're against mobile voting, if we had to generalize them as a whole.
Yes, I would say there's a few people, I guess, that are in the minority there that think that it can be done. They're not necessarily promoting current voting technology, voting apps, mobile voting apps, but they're saying it could be done, and they're not willing to sort of discount it. But there's a lot of folks, like the people that you talk to, who feel very strongly that despite how secure smartphones are right now, that the systems that we need in place and the funding, and like Hendler said, all this stuff that needs to be done is nowhere near the point where this can be deployed in a safe and secure manner. I guess I'll push back on Nix's comments here to say that security advocates, yeah, they're not really interested in solving the long-term problem of voter turnout. They're security researchers. They're interested in finding security vulnerabilities and getting the companies that make this software, make any software or any technology, fix the problems and develop their technology in a more secure manner, and to be responsive and to accept the vulnerabilities when they're found. That's not really what votes did in this case. They were very contentious. They attacked the MIT researchers. They are still pushing back on the findings. And this is after, it's worth noting because we just experienced this ourselves, this is after votes commissioned an independent third party firm, security consultancy called Trail of Bits, to test their real app and their real current backend server. And Trail of Bits came out with a report that was paid for by votes and by the mobile voting project. This report came out and said, yeah, we confirmed the existence of these vulnerabilities and we found some other issues as well. When that happens, I think an apology, first of all, is probably in order, and maybe some reflection upon how the mobile voting company can work with the security community better. I get that, to her point, that they're not really, that it seems like they're against it, and your point as well, that it seems like the majority of the security community is apprehensive about this. I think there's good reason, and I think that because of this friction between not just votes and security researchers, but I've been told from someone who is pretty tapped into what's going on with these types of companies, that, you know, anonymous source, that there's been some friction with some other companies and some other pilot programs and pilot apps as well. Votes is just the one that has been the most publicized by way of the MIT paper. And I get it. It's probably frustrating for them. But I think they need to make a better effort. The entire voting technology community needs to do a better job of engaging the security community. Because even the electronic voting machines that don't use the internet are very, very much against having their stuff tested in a public way. They don't put their products up for any type of research or security testing. They don't do bug bounties. I mean, at least Votes was doing a bug bounty. At least they had engaged HackerOne. That's a start. That's better. But the voting tech community overall is does not have a stellar reputation with the security community. So, yeah. And unless that changes, like, I mean, to Hendler's point, like, I don't know how you're going to get to where you need to be unless that relationship improves and there is a fluid exchange of information and data between these guys where, you know, the vendors aren't sort of immediately going on the defensive and attacking them for being publicity hounds and for trying to, you know, be for trying to attack democracy, which is, I mean, that's just ridiculous. So, yeah.
The last thing I kind of want to touch on before we wrap this up is that I want to touch on sort of the argument for mobile voting, because I think, yes. I think we've talked a lot about the critical side of mobile voting, but we haven't actually talked too much about why mobile voting might be important for our democracy. One, with COVID-19, giving more people the accessibility to vote would be nice if it was possible. It sounds like it's not, but if it was possible, would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Sheila also pointed out two groups of people who would definitely benefit from mobile voting. One are people in the military who are overseas, and then their families who are overseas, just people in the military deployed. And then people with certain disabilities. Sheila said that there were many disabilities, but the one that she really touched on was blindness, because without mobile voting, it's hard to make a voting solution that would work remotely for a person with blindness.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a mobile app that would allow someone to vote, there are already accessibility options built into the phone.
Yeah.
So I think helping more people participate in democracy is a nice thing overall.
Yeah. And I think that we may get to that point. Hopefully, if we get both political parties at least willing to explore some type of way to improve the current system, which is really rough right now, not just because of the pandemic, but because we're using outdated technology and we have, you know, poll closures and we have long lines and it's just you never know how long it's going to take. I think exploring this tech to make improvements there is ultimately going to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, I think that does it for our discussion on mobile voting. We'll see what happens with it. I wouldn't hold your breath to see anything happen anytime soon, but you know, maybe it's going to start going in the right direction. We'll see.
Yeah.
Alex, thank you as always for joining me on the podcast. I appreciate the time.
Of course, Rob. Thank you for having me as always.
And I encourage everybody to read Alex's story on Search Security. It is it's an excellent one. And thank you. Yeah, of course. You did all the work there. So
that's not true.
All right. I helped.
I had a good editor.
Okay. Thank you. You'll get bonus points for that later.
Yes.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.